China says it will take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests, just after the U.S. added 23 Chinese entities to an economic blacklist. Iran slams what it calls shameful Western hypocrisy, just after some American and European politicians attended an annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group. And the Western U.S. is bracing for more scorching heat wave after dangerously hot conditions killed scores of people in June. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Sanjafi. Good to have you with us. Beijing lashes out at the United States for blacklisting several more Chinese entities over alleged human rights abuses. The Chinese Minister of Commerce said that Washington's addition of 23 Chinese entities to an economic blacklist amounts to serious breach of international economic and trade rules. The ministry added the U.S. move is an unreasonable suppression of Chinese companies. It is stressed that Beijing will take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. Now, this is amid an ongoing trade war between the two countries, which have been at loggerheads over several issues, including tariffs on imports. Well, I talked to political commentator Andrew Leung, and he believes that a U.S. anti-China policies show it is trying to turn itself into a global hegemonic power.
There is a great power, a rivalry, not only in trade, but in technology, on the ideology, on the military in the South China Sea, and on human rights, including Taiwan, Xinjiang, Hong Kong, and on values, democracy against so-called authoritarianism. So it's a great power rivalry across the board, 360 degrees. Now, this latest episode reflects in the eyes of Beijing and continuing inability for the United States to think outside the box in the sense that somehow the United States still clings to its perception of world hegemony as if it can call the shots on all matters and over all countries. But this the times have changed. In the sense that the American hegemony is in decline, not that American power is in decline or its economy is in decline, but its hegemony is in decline, in the sense that it can no longer call the shots on everything. And it has got to share power with a rising China. Sooner rather than later, the Chinese economy is going to exceed the United States as the largest economy in the world.
Tehran slamming Western countries for backing and participating in an annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said that the MKO is a terrorist cult that has the blood of Iranian people on its hands. Saeed Khatibzadeh slammed Western politicians, including former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, for selling themselves to the Europe-hosted circus. He accused the West of shameful hypocrisy driven by insatiable thirst for money and anti-Iran obsession. The MKO's 3-day virtual meeting, which began in Paris on Saturday, is attended by Pompeo and several American lawmakers, as well as Slovenian Prime Minister. Every year, the event brings together delegates paid by the terror group. The MKO has performed assassination and bombing campaigns against the Iranians since the country's Islamic Revolution in 1979.
The Mujahideen Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in a bid to overturn the Islamic establishment and control the country. They also conducted dozens of bombings across Iran. Out of nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the group's acts of terror. Former Iranian President Mohammad Ali Rajoi and ex-Prime Minister Mohammad Javad Bahonar are among those killed in the MKO terror attacks. The group is also responsible for a massive blast targeting the headquarters of the Islamic Republic Party on June 28, 1981 in Tehran. At least 72 senior Iranian officials and lawmakers, including then Judiciary Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Ali Beheshti, lost their lives in the bombing. The MKO is also behind a failed assassination attempt on the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in 1981. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, MKO members were armed by then the Iraqi regime and prepared them to fight alongside Baathist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all crimes committed by the MKO, it is not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US, that often claim to be against any form of terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their lists of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012 respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor. The MKO throws lavish conferences every year in the French capital Paris, with well-known American, Western, and Saudi figures in attendance as guests of honor. Some of these figures who attend these events include former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former Mayor of New York City Rudy Giuliani, former Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and former Saudi spy chief Prince Turki bin Faisal Al Saud. The MKO is currently based in Albania, where it enjoys freedom of activities despite being involved in taking thousands of innocent Iranian lives and plotting terrorist attacks for decades.
International lawyer Barry Grossman says that Washington's support for the anti-Iran MKO terrorist group indicates the extent that it is trying to push its political agenda against the Islamic Republic.
It's all quite clearly evidence of the lengths that the United States will go to in order to push their illegitimate political agendas in foreign nations. Let's not forget that this organization was listed by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization until quite recently. And then suddenly, as a result of lobbying and as a result of, I presume, some assessment by the security apparatus that they could prove useful, that designation was removed. And since that time, the U.S. has been actively involved in providing support and backing them. In fact, there have been a number of instances in the U.S. where people have been almost arbitrarily arrested just for trying to keep an eye on the MEK headquarters in California and other places where they're operating. And of course, we all know that this organization now operates very openly and with full support from the Atlantic World apparatus in Europe and Romania.
Recent visits by the Taliban delegation to Tehran and Moscow come as the militants are intensifying attacks, mainly in district centers and border lines across northern and western Afghanistan. This has sparked mixed reactions.
Nowadays, the Taliban are gaining more ground in Afghanistan by increasing their attacks, especially on district centers and border areas, mainly in the northern and western parts of the country. The Taliban captured some key border areas in northern and western provinces of Badakhshan, Kunduz, Faryab, and Herat over the last week. These gains have at least added to Kremlin's concerns. Moscow voiced concern over the possibility of Taliban militancy spilling across the border into Tajikistan. That came after hundreds of Afghan troops fled to Tajikistan due to the Taliban's advances in northeastern Badakhshan province earlier this week. The militants also captured the Islam Qala customs checkpoint located near the Iranian border in western Herat province. The Taliban have stepped up their attacks across Afghanistan at a time when the group's political wing has, ironically enough, become active as well. Two Taliban delegations traveled to Tehran and Moscow earlier this week as a show of the group's will to find a political solution to the Afghan conflict. This comes as war-weary Afghans widely welcome any move to bring stability to their country by any player, mainly the Taliban. However, some here believe that there are some secret deals that lead Afghan troops to surrender to the Taliban and hand over areas to them. But the Afghan president strongly rejects the allegation.
There is no any secret deal. We are not willing to surrender to the Taliban at any cost. The time has come to bravely defend our land and dignity. The Taliban cannot force us to surrender even in 100 years' time.
In the meantime, a spokesman for the Taliban has also said that they will offer a written peace proposal to the Afghan government within a month. However, many also doubt about the real intentions of the Taliban. They, for instance, argue that the Taliban's diplomatic efforts are simply political maneuvering to restore their image among the public who have not forgotten how difficult life was under the Taliban rule over Afghanistan before 2001.
The Taliban are struggling to win the hearts and minds of people by attempts such as focusing on political moves like traveling to Iran and Russia. But we cannot approve their rule over Afghanistan unless they honor our values and major achievements, mainly human rights and press freedom.
Taliban militants have scaled up their attacks all over Afghanistan since May. But the emergence of popular forces mainly in northern Afghanistan turned things against the Taliban's will. That is why some experts have believed the recent political moves by the Taliban are due to the pressure coming from public resistance forces against the group. Forces who have in some cases liberated dozens of districts from Taliban control. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Afghanistan has been mired in a deadly conflict for decades. People across much of the country have to deal with violence and uncertainty on a near daily basis. Iranian documentary filmmaker Mohsen Islamzadeh has risked his life to depict the lives of people on the very front lines of the battle. His movie, called Life Among War Flags, will be aired for the first time. In an interview with our network, Islamzadeh talked about his daring journey.
I had promised myself to show both sides of the war. The first part of my documentary was filmed among Afghan government forces. Then I took a very big risk and secretly set an appointment with the Taliban. They were scared of me as I was of them. I didn't know what was going to happen. The most important point was that we needed to move along the lines of battle, because our documentary was about the lives of the people on both sides of the war. People are afraid of all warring sides, of the Americans, the Afghan army, Daesh, and the Taliban. No one knows who will have control of their territory the next day, Daesh, the Americans, or the army. We had to act as we did in order to capture the unique experience that the conditions offered. We stepped into war zones where unmanned US aircraft were hovering above our heads. Viewers demand a special work, so we took all risks to produce a good documentary.
Moving on, the western United States is bracing for more scorching heat wave after the country recorded June as the hottest month in 127 years of record keeping. The National Weather Service has predicted dangerously hot conditions, including temperatures of up to 54 degrees Celsius in Death Valley, California. The existing record of high temperatures likely to be rivaled or broken. It also warned of the elevated risk of heat-related illnesses. The hottest month of June, which coincided with a record-setting drought, killed scores of people, strained electric grids, and depleted reservoirs. The extended heat wave has already killed at least 116 people in Oregon alone. Based on the opinion poll, the majority of Brazilians back impeaching President Jair Bolsonaro. According to a survey conducted by Datafolha, 54% of people support a proposed move by the lower house to open impeachment proceedings, while 42% oppose it. People have been holding protests across Brazil for months, slamming the president's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, a Supreme Court judge authorized an investigation into Bolsonaro for dereliction of duty over procuring an Indian COVID vaccine. Suspicions of overpricing and corruption related to the contract have been cited for the allegation. Brazil has the world's second highest COVID death toll, with nearly 533,000. Saturday, it registered more than 48,000 new daily cases and 1,200 deaths. Political commentator Bruno Biclini says that Brazilians realize the fact that President Jair Bolsonaro is not a reliable politician.
Well, we can affirm that Jair Bolsonaro's basis and support and legitimacy is disintegrating. The poll does not reveal the worst part of the scenario in Brazil, is that we have 6,175 professional military people, military officers, inside the civilian government. And what are they doing? They are supporting Bolsonaro's escalation to threaten democratic institutions. For example, this week, the defense minister and the whole commander-in-chief of the army, the navy, and the air force, and the day after this, the commander of the air force, they threatened the Congress and they threatened democracy in Brazil. They are not saying we are going to do a coup d'etat, but they are threatening, because they do have some colonels, some lieutenant and colonels inside the health ministry very, very committed, I would say, for suspicious about the Indian vaccine and other, I would say, mystery negotiations. So we do have a polarized society, but the right wing and the right wingers in Brazil, they are splitted. They are not even, maybe a half of them is still support Bolsonaro, and 55, 57, 61% does not rely on Bolsonaro. He's not a reliable man, a reliable person in Brazil.
The coronavirus pandemic continues to take its toll on India as the number of infections keeps rising in the world's second most populous nation. It's reported well over 42,000 new cases on Sunday, pushing the caseload to 31 million. There were also some 900 new deaths, and that pushed the fatalities to 409,000. India has the world's second highest number of cases and the third largest number of deaths. Experts blame the growing number of infections on the Delta variant. That's a more dangerous and contagious breed of the virus. They say restrictions should be put in place to stem the rise in the number of deaths and infections. Now, Bulgarians go to the polls in the second parliamentary vote in just 3 months after an April election resulted in a fragmented parliament. The vote pits the Conservative Party, a long-serving premier, Boko Borisov, against the anti-establishment party of TV host Slavi Trifonov. They tied at around 20% in the last poll. Both would need support of other traditional parliamentary parties to form a government if they win. Bulgaria is run by an interim government, and that after the April vote failed to produce a government. The former government of Borisov lost public appeal last year amid mass rallies against what demonstrators called entrenched corruption in the establishment. In Moldova, people are also voting in a snap parliamentary election after President Maia Sandu dissolved parliament in April. 101 parliamentary seats are up for grabs in the vote. Early results are expected hours after the polls close at 1800 GMT. Sandu's pro-Western allies hope to take over the chamber after they secure the presidency in 2020. They face a coalition of supporters of former President Igor Dodon, which held a majority of 54 seats in parliament before its dissolution in April. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, July 11th, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages from around the world. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. Dear listeners, if you have any messages for different listeners around the world, then please record your voice, send it to us, and then get your voice heard. Please remember, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, is your program, dear listeners. It's your views that are important. And here, I, on behalf of my colleagues, do express my deepest condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Muhammad Taqi, the ninth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Please stay with us. Welcome back, dear listeners. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. For your information, these reception reports are very important and very useful to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. For your information, again, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Christer Bronstorm from Sweden, one of our regular listeners, Matto Holosi from Hungary, also one of our regular listeners, and the last but not the least is a reception report from Abed Hossein Sajed, one of our regular listeners from Pakistan. So, Christer, Matto, and Abed Hossein, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. As usual, we have received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters. From Norway, we have an email from Raider Bo. Raider Bo is one of our regular listeners. From Chile, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, and that is Hector Fria Hofre. Sayed Abbas Taghi from Pakistan has sent us an email. From the UK, we have an email from Paul R. Newton. And as I said before, the last but not the least is an email from England. And this email is from Patrick Travers. Patrick Travers is one of our regular listeners who has sent us an email. Well, dear listeners of Listeners Special, after a short break, I will be back with these kind messages. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program, dear listeners. And as I said, we have received an email from Norway. This email is from Raider Bo. Raider Bo is one of our regular listeners who says, "Hello, thank you very much for the beautiful EQSL card. This was much appreciated. I'm sorry to hear that some packages have been rejected by the post office of a number of countries. But fortunately, they cannot stop emails or your shortwave transmissions. Best regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Raider Bo from Norway, one of our regular listeners, and many thanks for sending us this email. So, you like the EQSL card that my colleagues designed for you, and that's good news for us in IRIB English Radio, and especially Listeners Special. And what a pity. Those packages, as you mentioned, were rejected by the post office, and thanks for informing us about this trouble. And as you said, fortunately, the emails and shortwave transmissions cannot be stopped, fortunately. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Raider Bo from Norway, please. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Raider Bo from Norway. And from Chile, one of our regular listeners, Hector Fria Hofre, has sent us an email. Hector says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I am pleased to send you a reception report of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm very happy with the current moment of the propagation, which allows us to listen to distant radio signals. I was happy listening to the Holy Quran verses from your radio, as I believe that the Quranic verses are universal. They are understood with the spirit. The signal itself is not very strong, which is logical. But the headphones, it is perfectly audible. I would like to receive information about your country. Best regards. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Hector Friahofer from Chile. And I do appreciate you for sending us this email. You mentioned every detail about our English radio programs. And thank you very much for, briefing these things, including, as you said, you sent us a reception report about the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Many thanks for your reception report. And you also mentioned that the signal was not very strong and it was logical, but you said with headphones it was perfectly audible. We will inform our technicians and engineers about the trouble you had about receiving the signal, but overall we are happy that you were successful in receiving our signals, the signals of IRIB English Radio in your country, in Chile. You said you had the chance to listen to the verses of the Noble Quran. And it was great. And as you said, the verses of the Quran are universal and it's for all the people around the world. And as you said, it can be understood with the spirit. So you mentioned that you like to receive information about Iran. We in IRIB English Radio broadcast many different programs about our country, about Iran. Currently we are broadcasting different programs about Iran, and you can find the archive of these programs in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. These programs include Iranian Market, Iranian Notables, and also, of course, Close Up Iran. Close Up Iran is a program about tourist attractions of Iran, and there, in our website and in the shortwave radio, you can find these programs and you can listen to them. Of course, there are different programs about our country, and as I said, the archive is available at our website. Anyway, Hector Friahofer from Chile, many thanks for writing this detailed email about IRIB English Radio programs. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you, Hector Friahofer. Well, dear listeners, we will be back after a short break. Welcome back to Listeners Special. As I said, from Pakistan, we have an email from Sayyid Abbas Taghi. Sayyid Abbas Taghi from Pakistan says, "Dear Sir or Madam, in the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting, I want to promote your service in my area. As you may know, Muzaffargarh is the city of listeners in Pakistan due to the number of radio listeners in this area. So do me a favor and post me some of your promotional materials along with few literatures. Thank you. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you from Iran to Pakistan and to Sayyid Abbas Taghi, one of our listeners who has, I do apologize for my voice. So Sayyid Abbas Taghi has received our signals in his country, in Pakistan, and in his area, and he said his area is called Muzaffargarh, which is his area is called the City of Listeners. That's great. Muzaffargarh is the City of Listeners in Pakistan, and that is because the number of radio listeners in this area. That's great. I didn't know about that. Great information. So in your area, Muzaffargarh, there are so many radio listeners. That's great. Of course, Sayyid Abbas Taghi We will send you an EQSL card, and we will send you promotional materials and souvenirs of IRB English Radio, if available, and if the health protocols regarding the post office let us do so. Thank you very much for sending us this message. Sayyid Abbas Taghi from Pakistan sent our, of course, regards to your fellow countrymen and the listeners in your area. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon and receiving your views about the broadcast of IRB English Radio. Many thanks. And from the UK, as I said, we have an email from Paul R. Newton. Paul is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear Sir or Madam at IRB English Radio, I heard your broadcast at 1945 UTC last night. On looking this morning in my IRTH 2021, I wasn't sure if it was Iran. I was using a frequency of about 6035 kilohertz. It kept changing slightly by about 5 kilohertz due to interference. Sound kept coming and going. I haven't heard shortwave radio for a while. I have already written to and heard in the last couple of days Romania, Turkey, Italy, and China, and I hope I can receive a QSL card or an EQSL from IRIB English Radio. Thank you in advance." Well, salam and greetings to you, Paul R. Newton from the UK, and deep thanks to you for writing us this detailed information and email. So you heard our broadcast recently, and it's good news for us. And also you mentioned that you had trouble in the sound. As you said, it was coming and going. Of course, it was because of the interference, and we will inform our engineers and technicians about this problem. We hope that this problem fades very soon. And of course, you said you listened to different radio stations during the last couple of days, different radio stations in Romania, Turkey, Italy, and China. That's great. And now you are listening to IRIB English Radio from Iran, and of course my colleagues will send you an EQSL card, and if available, the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. Paul R. Newton from the UK, write to us soon and tell us your views about different programs of IRIB English Radio. Many thanks. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with the rest of the emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back from England. We have an email from Patrick Travers. Patrick is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear friends, I found listening to your English broadcast this evening very informative and enjoyable. I would be very interested in learning more about your broadcast, and I would welcome any information, including frequency schedule, etc. Please, will you send a program schedule and pennant or any other publicity manual? Thank you." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Patrick Travers from England, and many thanks for writing this email to us. We are so happy that you found IRIB English Radio broadcast, as you described, very informative and enjoyable. That's good news. And about your request about sending you frequency schedules and program schedule, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/yen, and there you can find our frequency schedule and program schedule. And of course, my colleagues will, as soon as possible, send you an EQSL card and the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio if available, and if the health protocols of post office let us do that. Patrick Travers from England, many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio, and listeners special, write to us soon. We wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you. Well, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with you. And now, dear listeners, of listeners special on IRIB English Radio, here again, I do express my deepest condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Muhammad Taqi, the ninth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We wish you all the best. Many thanks for being with us, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, imagine a terrorist group which has been operating for decades, killing tens of thousands of people of various nationalities. Iranians, Iraqis, Americans, and others have all fallen victim to the Mojahedin Khalq organization, the MKO, also known as the MEK. Now, the organization has targeted at least 17,000 Iranians and is currently holding its annual meeting, this time online. Despite its horrible human rights record, the organization is no longer listed as a terrorist group by the U.S. and the EU. Its meetings are held in Paris, and some Western politicians will once again participate in the meeting. The question is why? Stay with us as we take a look at one of the world's most notorious groups, the Mujahideen Khalq organization, on the Spotlight.
The Mujahideen Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in a bid to overturn the Islamic establishment and control the country. They also conducted dozens of bombings across Iran. Out of nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the group's acts of terror. Former Iranian President Mohammad Ali Rajoi and ex-Prime Minister Mohammad Javad Bahonar are among those killed in the MKO terror attacks. The group is also responsible for a massive blast targeting the headquarters of the Islamic Republic Party on June 28, 1981 in Tehran. at least 72 senior Iranian officials and lawmakers, including then Judiciary Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Ali Beheshti, lost their lives in the bombing. The MKO is also behind a failed assassination attempt on the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in 1981. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, MKO members were armed by then the Iraqi regime and prepared them to fight alongside Baathist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all crimes committed by the MKO, it is not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US, that often claim to be against any form of terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their lists of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012 respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor. The MKO throws lavish conferences every year in the French capital Paris, with well-known American, Western, and Saudi figures in attendance as guests of honor. Some of these figures who attend these events include former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former Mayor of New York City Rudy Giuliani, former Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and former Saudi spy chief Prince Turki bin Faisal Al Saud. The MKO is currently based in Albania, where it enjoys freedom of activities despite being involved in taking thousands of innocent Iranian lives and plotting terrorist attacks for decades.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the spotlight, activist and former MKO member Ebrahim Khodabandi out of Tehran, and expert in cultic abuse and radicalization, and Khodabandi out of Leeds. Thank you both for being with us. Well, I'd like to start this off with, and tell me, because from what I understand, you've had a personal experience in dealing with this group. I want to start off right there and give us a little background in your relationship in dealing with this group and what you found.
Hello, thank you for inviting me on the program.
Thank you for coming.
Yes, when I was a student back in 1978-79, Manchester University, I came across a group of Iranians who were very active in activities related to the revolution at that time. And being a young person, quite interested in politics and world affairs, I kind of got to know them and got sort of close to some of them. And from there, it's led to more and more involvement as a student, going to demonstrations in London, getting involved in sort of publicity activities. And little by little, I was drawn into the kind of atmosphere that they had created, to the point that in 1989, I actually gave up my job. I was a computer programmer at that time, well-paid job. I had a home, I had a car, and I gave that all up and became a full-time activist with the Mujahideen. That lasted for 3 years before I finally had enough, if you like, but it still took me another 3 years before I could actually separate from them and leave fully. So around about 96 maybe, I kind of washed my hands of the organisation. But from that point on, I really began to question the experiences I'd been through, and talking to other ex-members, it became very clear that this was no ordinary group and that it operated as a cult, and it used cultic abuse to control its members. And so from there, I did a lot of research, began to talk to people, experts in radicalization and so on and so forth, and began to campaign really against the group in order to try to help other members who, like myself, had been trapped and had no way of understanding what kind of situation they were in until they left.
Let me just jump in here. I want to understand it. So you were trapped in that group. You had been brainwashed, but at the time you didn't even realize it. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. Absolutely true. In fact, it was a question I raised with some of the more senior members. I said, are we a cult? And they basically laughed at me and said, well, no, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's just people trying to demonize the Mujahideen and trying to stop us from doing what we're doing, and sort of put obstacles in the way of our struggle. And of course, I was so brainwashed at that time that I was quite happy to, you know, accept that explanation.
Okay. Well, stay with me, and I'm going to come back to you, but want to get Ibrahim in on this conversation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Your experience, because you were a member. Tell me a little bit about your experience so our viewers understand who you are.
Thank you very much. I left Iran in 1971 to study in Britain. I was 18 then. And in 1981, I joined the organization. I became a full-time member, and mainly I was working in international department of the organization. I traveled to more than 20 countries and did diplomatic missions for the organization.
So you were a high-ranking member.
I was one of the officials of the international relations, actually. And in 2003, I left the organization, came back to Iran, and since then I've been active to try to reveal the true nature of this organization.
Okay, stop right there, because I want to understand. So what happened to make you want to leave the organization?
I realized that whatever they say, they lie to everybody. They trained us to lie to everybody, and we used to attract people to the way they wanted to be attracted, and gain the support of the parliamentarians, others, and we used to study about them. And I realized that I was brainwashed. And I joined the organization because I thought they are Islamic and they are anti-imperialist and they are socialist. But I realized that they are everything but these things that they claim. So I decided to try to tell everybody that also they claimed a lot of lies. They started their terrorist activities against Iran exactly 40 years ago, 1981. And in the first 10 years, they claimed 12,000 lives according to their own documents. And some people claim 17,000. Also, they moved to Iraq and joined the Iranians' enemy against Iranians. And all the people that they killed inside Iran were ordinary people. They had nothing to do with the government or politics. And even they abuse the very rights of their own people.
So let me just stop you one more time. So how does an individual, Iranian, as you said, who thought that they were joining an Islamic group and fighting for the people, then get to the point that they can kill regular people? I think this part is difficult for people to understand.
This is the nature of cults, as Mrs. Khodabandi just pointed out, that they attract people and recruit people with any excuse, and then the mind manipulation and the psychologic methodology works and keeps the people, and they make them to do things against their own wish.
Okay. Well, turning back to Leeds now, and I want to talk about this organization, and even though it has killed so many people, we look at these Western capitals that at one point in time, this organization was listed as a terrorist organization, for example, by the United States, by the EU, and then now is no longer listed. What do you make of that? What does that mean when it's still responsible for the killing of at least 17,000 human beings?
Sure, it is a strange phenomenon, isn't it, that a group which is so, I mean, the beginning of the program, there was a whole catalogue of the crimes and abuses that the Mujahideen have committed over the years, and yet Western politicians and media appear to turn a blind eye to that. There's several reasons. One is, as Ibrahim Khodabandi, my brother-in-law, I have to say, is pointing out, the Mujahideen are essentially deceptive, and so they will present themselves in a very, very different way to what they really are. they develop what you might call a radicalized persona, which is actually quite attractive. You've heard the expression magnetic personality. People who are radicalized do develop a superficial personality, which is actually very attractive to people. And so when they go into meetings with politicians and such like, they can sort of switch on this very charming and very convincing persona. And it is actually, unless you understand what's happening, it's quite difficult to resist it in many ways. Now, the second sort of point that the Mujahideen have is that, yes, there are many, many what you might call anti-Iran people, groups, politicians, governments. And so there's rich pickings, really, for finding support. And so, therefore, if you go to the neocons in America, for example, or Israel, you'll find lots and lots of people who are very, very much against Iran, and they will look for any sort of tool and any opportunity to harm Iran, to create propaganda, misleading information, and the sort of basically find a way to, sort of propagandize against the country. Mm-hmm. And Mujahideen, from the very beginning, set themselves up in that role. So not only were they involved in terrorism, when they were based in Iraq, they were very, very close to Iran, and they had a military presence. And so they could fulfill both those functions. However, since 2003, they've shifted their focus. They were disarmed by the US Army in 2003, and their focus is mostly now propaganda and intelligence work, which they are involved with.
Abraham, let's talk about their funding. I mean, where does the organization get its money from?
This is one of the things that they never let us to ask them. But my brother, Masoud Khodabande, had experience of going to Saudi Arabia, like Masoud Rajavi. He was invited by Amir Abdullah and Turki Faisal, who was the head of security system of Saudi. Mm-hmm. And he said that the amount of gold that they were given to could not be carried out by aeroplane, and they had to hire a lot of lorries to bring them to Iraq. And the organization has a lot of cover charity organizations, and they don't actually work as charity. They work for money laundry, and the help that comes from Saudi Arabia or from United States goes into these organizations and becomes like charity, and then goes to the organization, and it shows if the people are helping the organization. But they are wealthy organization. They get a lot of fund, and they well spend the money.
Why would the question I asked at the beginning of the show, why would these American politicians, or Western politicians, we've seen so many of them, some very high ranking individuals, especially during the Trump administration and others, why would they support this terrorist organization that's also responsible for the murder of Americans?
And the thing is, the reality is that with the Islamic Revolution in Iran, U.S. lost a lot of interests, and they are always after gaining this interest back. I remember I was 25 when the revolution occurred, and everybody knew that the power of U.S. ambassador in Tehran was more than Shah, who was the absolute monarch. And unfortunately, the U.S. officials don't have the understanding that time has changed, and they can't have this, the like of Mohammad Reza Pahlavi in Iran again. And the way that they support MEK shows that how the empty-handed they are against Iran, because this is the organization that is very much hated by the Iranians. I've been living in Iran for 18 years now. I've been communicating with the people, and I have not seen anybody being hated so much by the people, because they say that they have been working with the enemy, they have killed innocent people, and they encourage U.S. to impose sanctions against Iran, all these things. So it shows how Americans are empty-handed. It's not a good policy at all. But the time has come that they realize that Iran is a new Iran, and they should deal with a new Iran.
Okay, stay with me. Let me cross back over to Leeds. And I want to look at, because I was reading some of things you had written, and dealing with now this group is basically based in Albania, and that they're also trying to influence young people there. I want to talk about this toxic element of this organization, no matter where they are. And why would the Albanian government, or actually the Europeans, allow this base now in that country?
Yeah, I just want to just carry on from what everything was saying there, that we must make it clear that governments don't support the Mujahideen. It is, they are paid politicians who come to the conferences and ex-officials and such like. It isn't that the Mujahideen actually have the support of other governments. They are a useful tool for them. None of these governments, US, UK, European governments, they don't see the Mujahideen as a viable alternative, even though that's what the Rajavis would like you to see them as. So I just wanted to make it clear that since Mujahideen lost the support of Saddam Hussein, the only government which has actually offered them support is the Albanian government. They give direct support to them. And that is essentially why the Mujahideen are based there, because they have actually been literally pushed out of every other North America, Europe, Britain. They've been pushed out. In Albania, as you're suggesting, they are sort of reduced in number, and their sort of focus when they arrived there was to try to recruit some new people, local people, because obviously they didn't speak Albanian, they didn't know anything about the country, and in order to somehow embed themselves into that country, they began to they put on a recruitment drive, which is essentially how they recruited people like myself. And so yes, they started to target young Albanian people, getting them, sort of convincing them that they had this noble struggle against this demonic Iranian regime that was killing and harming people. And I think the Albanian media sort of picked up on this, and they were really shocked, and because they'd been told that the Mujahideen were there on humanitarian reasons, and they were sort of all prepared to go help them. And then suddenly this organization is trying to recruit people for regime change. And it was really essentially a shock to the system. Unfortunately for Albania, the Mujahideen are highly sophisticated in their methods of corruption and deception. And of course, Albania, being a country which is more or less ruled by America, America is not entirely independent in that sense. So the Americans gave the nod to the government to continue supporting the Mujahideen, okay, and not to stand in their way.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you, but we're so limited in time. Ibrahim, looking at this, I mean, Anne said basically that these countries really don't support them. In a sense. But I mean, we look at, for example, this annual meeting is held once again in Paris, although it is online this year, and we see how they have been delisted by the EU and by the United States. So at this point in time, when we see these Western governments supporting an entity, a terrorist entity, like the MKO, like the MEK, is it far-fetched to imagine, because a lot of, you know, there are lots of accusations about Western support for other terrorist organizations like Daesh, like al-Nusra Front. So when you don't make that line black and white, that you are really against terrorism, does that mean that they are actually supporters of terrorism? Or how do you see these Western governments? And basically, at the very least, we can say looking the other way with what the MEK and MKO is doing, and at best even supporting them and helping them with their activities.
Well, I think that the Western governments don't mind to use terrorists.